You are listening to a sermon by Janice Kreider, recorded on Sunday, April 10th, 2011, at the Point Grey Interminonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speaker are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
Well, I'm going to be talking on Psalm 23. Now, Psalm 23 is probably, next to the Lord's Prayer, one of the more familiar parts of the Bible. In fact, everybody here maybe has memorized Psalm 23. So we're going to have a little audience participation. And I memorized it in the King James Version of the Bible, because that's all we knew about in my day. And so we're going to be doing that. But before we do that, I realized that a number of you probably memorized it in German. Now, I can't lead you in that, but I asked Helmut to come up and lead you in the German version, version of the Lord's Prayer. And so if you would
Psalm
23. Psalm 23. Yeah, sorry. Psalm 23. So if you would all help him out with this. The ones that who can.
I knew it quite well when I was young, but now I'm a little nervous. I don't know what I'm going to manage. So you have to help me. Der Herr ist mein Hirte, mir wird nichts mangeln. Führet mich auf Grün. Führt mich in grüner Auer. Ja, das dachte ich mir schon, so was passieren. Erquicket meine Seele, führet mich auf frischem Straße um seines Namens willen. Und ob ich schon wanderte im finstern Tal, fürchte ich kein Unglück, denn du bist bei mir. Dein Stecken und Stab trösten mich. I knew it before I came up here. Du bereitest vor mir einen Tisch im Angesichte meiner Feinde, du salbest mein Haupt mit Öl und schenkest mir voll ein. Gutes und Barmherzigkeit werden mir folgen mein Leben lang, und ich werde bleiben im Hause des Herrn immer da.
Okay.
I hope you forgive me at my age.
That was very good. I think, yeah, that probably reached back in some of your memories. Now I'd like to recite it in the King James Version. Now that is not in your bulletin, so we'll see how we can do. Actually, I have it in front of me here, so I can cheat. So let's those of you who have memorized that, join in on that. And we'll be doing a third iteration shortly.
The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. He restoreth my soul. He maketh though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of my enemies. Thou anointest my head with oil. My cup runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever.
Now, I know memorization isn't the biggest thing nowadays, so I would like to ask everybody who's under the age of, say, 35, to join together and read the version in the bulletin. So, so somebody will have to start that. Maybe I'll pick on Travis. Yeah, can you start it out? And everybody under the age of 35, read a bit louder.
The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in right paths for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the darkest valley, I fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord my whole life long.
Thank you. This psalm is very familiar, and there probably have been a lot of sermons on it. But I'm going to limit my talk today to just two verses, in fact, just two parts of two verses. The first one is verse 5a, and I'm probably going to use the King James Version. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. And then verse 6b, the very last phrase in the psalm, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. So the first verse, we're going to be thinking about enemies here, verse 5a. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies, or as you heard it read from the bulletin, you prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. Eugene Peterson translates it like this: you serve me a six-course dinner right in front of my enemies. So the meaning is pretty clear. We're eating a sumptuous meal, and our enemies are noticing. They're watching us. And as Mennonites or Anabaptists, our ears perk up when we hear the word enemies, because like the Quakers, we emphasize loving and praying for our enemies, maybe more than some other denominations. In the Psalms, in the other Psalms, there are calls for God to punish or even kill the enemies. Or there are Psalms about hating our enemies. And I picked out a couple of them. Psalm 58:6, O God, break the teeth in their mouth. And Psalm 59:13, consume them in wrath, consume them until they are no more. But in Psalm 23, we don't hear those hateful ideas. We don't hear about vengeance. But we do hear an emotion, and that emotion is fear of enemies. In verse 4, we have, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me, thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. And you might have noticed in the NRSV, the verse reads, instead of through the valley of the shadow of death, it reads, through the darkest valley. Now, what's in that darkest valley are enemies, they're wild beasts or they're bandits. And there's fear there when you go through that. But the fear is removed by the rod that the shepherd carries. It's basically a weapon, and he can use that to beat up the wild beasts or maybe to scare the bandits. Maybe not. But the emotion of fear is there, but it's taken away, and there's not hate expressed. In verse 5a, the one about the table and the enemies there, we don't have fear expressed there. And verse 5 is a bit of a transition. The first four verses of the psalm are about sheep and the caring shepherd, and we have metaphors for that. But when we get to verse 5 and verse 6, it switches to people and Yahweh or God. Sheep do not eat at a table. They don't get their heads anointed with oil. Well, maybe they do. I don't know. But they don't drink from a cup. They do have enemies, but in fact, in the last two verses, they may have been killed and eaten. So it's a switch. So we have a table that's been prepared. It's probably not a table with four legs like we think of a table. It might not even be a coffee table with little short legs. One of the articles I read said that it would be a leather mat rolled out on the ground, much like we would do when we go on a picnic and we have a picnic blanket. We're not told that there's lots of food, but there probably is, to accompany all that wine. My cup overflows. And to complete the hospitality, you anoint my head with oil. That's a sign of trying to do everything upright. So as Peterson states, it's definitely a six-course dinner and probably has tender roasted lamb, pressed large linen napkins, and higher-end wines. The idea of a celebratory meal or banquet is a common one in the Bible, both the Old and the New Testament. And it's kind of the epitome of the concept of shalom, of well-being. But it's not something that happens 24/7, though. It's something special. Now back to the enemies that are watching the feast. This is an unusual idea. In Deuteronomy 12, verses 17 and 18, it describes a Thanksgiving offering that's to be eaten in a place specified by God. And you're supposed to invite your sons, your daughters, your slaves, and the local Levites. And it's kind of a public feast, but there's no mention of enemies. But in Psalm 23, the enemies are there. And the amazing thing is that we don't hear any emotions expressed about them. There's not fear, and there's not vengeance, there's not hate. As a child, when I read this verse, and maybe you shared these sentiments, I thought, oh, this meal has been set up to spite the enemies, to make them jealous. You know, I'm eating all this good food and you're not. Probably comes from sibling rivalry. So two ideas emerge here. I fear no evil is expressed in verse 4. And as I mentioned, the reason that there's no fear of evil is that the shepherd is there with the sheep as they go through the valley. And the sheep do not have the tools to handle the situation, but the shepherd does. And there's trust in the shepherd's care and in his power. So we could add something on to verse 6. Verse 5 it is. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. I will fear no evil, for you are with me. We could add that. The table is not prepared by someone who leaves the premises. He's still there. He's still pouring all that wine. And I read one amusing translation of "My cup runneth over." Goes like this: my beverage utensil experiences a volume crisis. Those hosted at this meal are free to let down their guard, because the host has the power and the tools to protect them. The enemies are still lurking around outside, but they can be ignored for the time being. The feasting can be in peace and in the safe refuge. Another way to look at this scene is to imagine that we're the enemies. And the celebration would probably be taking place outdoors, but even so, if it would, I mean, be taking place indoors, probably in a tent, but there, even so, I think we could see that something's going on, because maybe the cooking took place outdoors, and maybe they have vases of or jugs of wine that are sitting around outdoors. Anyway, we would be able to see something's going on. We'd probably be able to hear that something's going on. And wouldn't we want to be included? Wouldn't we want to join in? Because celebration over a meal is universal. In the Middle East, hospitality is very strong, and maybe we would have been invited. Maybe someone would have leaned out of the tent and said, "Join us, we've got lots. There's always room for more." Maybe we weren't invited. But if we were invited, maybe we excluded ourselves. And why would we do that? Well, because there were some pressures on us, probably. Maybe social pressures, ethnic pressures, political, psychological, or military pressures holding us back to joining in. We'd have to imagine why we wouldn't want to be part of that. The scene reminds me of the interview in the latest Canadian Mennonite with Alan and Eleanor Kreider. when she was asked, what does mission look like in a post-Christendom world? She answered, it looks like neighbors and strangers gazing in the windows of the Christian community, longing for the invitation to join the bounteous meal spread on the generous table. Christians look out those same windows, looking for ways to serve and listening for the heartbeat of the world. Another example of non-Christians looking on what happens in the Christian community is when I was going to Mountain View, probably when Carl was going. Somebody was moving, and you know, if you're young and you belong to a church and one of your friends in the church moves, you help them move, right? And the person's colleague at work, a non-Christian, thought that was unfair because he got all this help from his church. So, okay, going to verse 6b, the very last verse in the psalm. And I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. You may have noticed the little difference in the NRSV. And I shall dwell in the house of the Lord my whole life long. Instead of forever, it's my whole life long. So that weakens it a bit, doesn't it? It takes the eternity a little bit out of it. But that's what the Hebrew is, and that's why the NRSV is written that way. Going to the Hebrew for the first part of that phrase modifies that as well. Instead of dwell, the word is return. So the verse more accurately reads, and I shall return to the house of the Lord throughout my life. A little bit different meaning, isn't it? Another way of thinking about it is, I shall be a guest in Yahweh's house as long as I live. Now, the word dwelling, it's used in a lot of the Psalms, and I don't know in those other Psalms whether it means return or whether it means dwell. But dwelling in the temple forever, it might not be something people want to do, might not want to live there. We know the widow Anna lived there. And does everyone want to become a priest and be in the temple? Not everyone can be a priest. The psalm may have been used on ascending to the temple, part of the pilgrimage, and then the meaning of returning made more sense. I'm welcome to return at any time. Now, reinforcing the word return instead of dwell comes from verse 3a, he restores my soul. Now, this is a little obscure, but I'll go through this. Now, he restores my soul. That's one of my favorite verses, and I like to imagine God as a restorer of souls. And it's probably an okay thing to do, but the verse might mean something a little bit different. Sheep need several things. They need land to graze on, they need water, they need shelter at night, and they need somebody who's responsible to take them around to these things. Now, the psalm covers these needs with the mention of green pastures, still waters, right paths, and verse 3a, which one commentator says refers to herding the sheep back to the fold, back to the shelter of safety and rest. So this commentator says it's more like herd me in. It's the opposite of scatter. And the word scatter is used in the Old Testament. The Israelites were scattered. Sometimes it's a military thing. Sometimes it's a more of a theological thing. But here they're being the sheep are being herded into a safe enclosure. But they're not there 24/7 because they have to be on the move. The vegetation in the land is sparse. And some nights they might not make it back. And on the way, they may be going through a very dark valley. But the corral, the sheepfold, is where they are refreshed. It's where they are restored. And it's where their bodies are prepared for what they will experience the next day. So if we take some of those ideas from the sheep part of the psalm and bring them into this other part of the psalm, the idea of returning to the house of the Lord, although maybe we think it's weaker than dwelling there, living there all the time, it makes sense, and it's a reassuring one. We're on a journey, but we can return to the house of the Lord at any time. We have a standing invitation for the rest of the journey of our lives. The downside is that we may still be pursued by enemies. But the good news is that we're also pursued by God's goodness and mercy. In the verse, "Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life," the word "follow" is not something describing a benign thing that's floating along behind us, but it's a word that's the same as pursue. Now, perhaps not many of us in this room have been physically pursued by enemies, but I think Helmut has had that experience, and the Funk sisters, maybe. Having to physically be on the move, because if you wouldn't be, you wouldn't be here. Some of us may have been pursued by mad dogs, too. And we know that many people around the world today are pursued by armed soldiers. But the psalm promises that we will be pursued, we will be chased by God's goodness and loving kindness. Now, I've torn this psalm apart a bit for you, and I hope I haven't ruined it. Even if I'm totally wrong with some of these ideas, I want you to be left with the comforting theme of this psalm. And this psalm is like many of the other psalms, if you read through them. The underlying theme is God is with you and cares for you. And I'd like you to remember that. God is with us and cares for us.